David Lichtenstein, I'd like to make an announcement that you can now get an app at the App Store, either for an iPhone or for a Samsung device, and go to the App Store, put in Headlines Radio Show, and you'll access an app which will list all 100-some-odd shows. Click on any one and listen to it. You don't have to go to a website. You don't have to be by a computer, just from your iPhone. But if you're not listening to us on the App Store, you can always get us, as usual, at WMCA 570 AM or WMCA.com, Matzah Shabbos, or on Nachum Siegel. Or, again, a replay, Nachum Siegel at 11 a.m. Monday morning. Any question you have, please send to info@headlinesbook.com. That's, again, that's info@headlinesbook.com, and we will try to respond. But before we begin our really fabulous show this week with its amazing guests, I'd like to share with you a thought. Do you know that in the entire Genesis, Chumash Bereishis, there are only three mitzvahs, right? And then in this parsha, there are 20. More in this parsha than entire Chumash Bereishis. All the Pesach, all the halachas of the Seder, of the Karban Pesach, Chametz, the Chagah Pesach. So the Sefer HaChinuch, which is a work that lists all Taryag mitzvahs in their order, tries to find a reason for each of the mitzvahs. And this philosophy, he's unknown who he is. He lived in the 1200s. He lived in total anonymity. We don't know who he is. On the mitzvah of Etzem Le'Sishbaru Bay, you shouldn't break a bone in the Karban Pesach. So he says like this, he asks the question. He says, our first appearance in world history, right, is in this week's Parsha, where we become a nation. And it's fitting that it should be commemorated with some act, which is a mitzvah, to commemorate Yetzias Mitzrayim Karban Pesach. But he says, 20 of them? Do we need 20 mitzvahs to commemorate our exit from slavery? So he says a yesod, and he wrote this 800 years ago. But you'll see, a great Harvard researcher has rediscovered this yesod. Normally, most of us think that our actions are influenced by our thoughts. You know, you have that bad thought, and boom, you put it into action. The Chinuch said something amazing. This anonymous, brilliant philosopher. He says, no, that man's thoughts are influenced by his actions. Exact opposite. He says, if a man is a total rushy, thoroughly wicked, and his mind is dominated by evil thoughts of the worst kind all day long, but if he endeavors to do good actions, to follow the mitzvahs, to learn Torah, even though shalei lishma, not with an intent, a godly intent, he will inevitably veer towards the good. The wrong motive will be led to the right one by the forces of the actions you take. Actions shape character, not the other way around. Achrei, his lashon is, achrei ha-pa'ulois nimshacheis halavavois. Now, there was a Harvard researcher by the name of Dana Carney. She actually put up a TED Talk that had something like 30 million hits, maybe the most popular TED Talk, one of the two or three most popular ever. And she talks about this chiddush that she thinks she was machadish. And what is it? She says, the way we act and look influences how we think. And what did she say? They took a whole bunch of people going for interviews. And they told half of them beforehand, square your shoulders, stand upright, puff up your chest, smile, put a pen in your mouth, clench a pencil in your mouth, and then go into the interview. The interviewers had no idea. They were blind. They had no idea which were the test group and which weren't. Then they took another group of people and they said, hunch over, cross your arms, hunch down, like put yourself into a smaller, like when somebody's fearful, they hunch up, and then go into the interview. The vast majority of the people who puffed up did well on the interviews. Those who were hunched down did poorly. The interviewers knew nothing. Additionally, they tested the testosterone level. of the people who had, you know, puffed up, smiled, made a, you know, an effort to, like, take up more space, their testosterone level actually went up. So role acting changes your testosterone. The way you act, achrei hapu'ulois nimshachais halavavais. So the great Chinuch says, the Torah gave us mitzvahs because we can have bad thoughts. We can have depressing thoughts. If you do the mitzvah, you do the act of a mitzvah, mitzvahs for the most part are actions, it will change our thoughts too. He says, you could be a Rasha Gomer. You do the mitzvahs, you'll become a righteous person. Now, what does that mean to us? I think that has a lot of, you know, you may have that one child you don't particularly not so fond of. Maybe he or she is, they're just different from you. They take after your spouse. Whichever one is listening is the other one. And something about them that annoys you, that this child is exactly, you think the child doesn't know. Make that effort. If you say to that child 10 times, you know, I really admire X about you, or I love you, you will love them and you will admire X. Your attitude will change. That's what the chinuch. If that spouse, that you, there's something you don't like, if you tell them, I admire this about you, and you say it again, I admire it, you will admire that person. That's what the chinuch says, and that's what Dana Carney says, depending on where your pecking order is, right? Let me share with you. The Gemara lists mitzvahs that Scharam Bitsidam. It says by Shiluah Hakan, Lamanya Richon Yamecha, by it says by Kibud Av Eim. Now here's an interesting one. Why doesn't the Gemara say, it says, Miha Ish HaChafetz Chaim, you are desirous of life? Ahiv Yamim, you love to live a good days. Right? Lirais Taiv, you want to see the good life. So what does it say? Nitzar Lashon Chamira, don't talk Lashon Hara. Well, why doesn't the Gemara list Lashon Hara as one of the mitzvahs that's Chara Betzida? That does a God has promises you these following things. I haven't seen this question, but I have an answer. I think that when you speak Lashon Hara, if you walk up and you say, "Ah, my partner, he's terrible. My kid, my Rosh Hashiva, my Rav, my wife, my life is terrible." You know what? If that's what you say, it becomes your reality. Achrei ha-pa'ulais, you say the words, they become your reality. If, on the other hand, you say, my life is wonderful. Do you know that people who had 100 years ago, they lived 100 years ago, when they had to go to the dentist, they used a plier, and I don't care if you were King George. That's all they had. They didn't have anesthetics. They didn't have heat. They didn't have refrigeration. They didn't have air conditioning. They didn't have crock pots. They didn't have gas-fired stoves. They didn't have car. Look how lucky we are. If you say it, you become it. So the reason why it's not one of the mitzvahs that is matan schar b'tzida is because it's not a schar. God isn't giving you some reward if you say it. It's just a fact. Achrei ha-pa'ulos nimshach halavavos. If you say, my life is really great, guess what? Your life has become great if you say it enough times. Let me share with you a beautiful Hasidish story. Let's face it, the Hasidim were masters of stories. So here's a story. I don't know, it may be apocryphal, but the message is powerful. You know, go back to the year 1800. If you were Jewish and you lived in Russia and Poland, you couldn't do anything. You couldn't be a plumber, a doctor, a nurse, a school teacher. You couldn't be a salesperson. The government rules, Jews are not allowed. They were allowed to do a few things, like they were allowed to be tax collectors. The goal being was a job everybody hated. They gave it to the Jews, moneylenders. How was he going to enforce a lien? Very few things. A lot of poor schnorrers and schleppers. And people just were tired of giving tzedakah money. So there's this band of collectors, schnorrers, schleppers, they came together, and they used to go from town to town. They would get a rind of bread, and it was horrible. One day they're in this town, and guess what? This Rebbe comes to town. Rebbe came to town. The people in the town were so excited. They rolled out a big table with linen. The ladies came running with stuffed geese, chicken, whatever. The schnorrers were there. They were invited too. They sat down, they feasted, they had the time, best meal they ever had. Well, the next day they made another meal, then the rebel left town, end of story. So one of them says to the other, "Ah, wouldn't it be great if we knew when the rebel was coming to town? Imagine we would get to eat." Then one of them's a bright one. He has an idea. He says, "I have a great idea. Why don't we take one of us? We'll go buy him a white silk kaftan, a jibitza. We'll buy him a beautiful shtreimel. We'll give him a name. We'll call him the Chichiva Rebbe. And instead of just going into a town collecting, we'll send five of us in advance. We'll announce, the Chichiva Rebbe is coming. The Chichiva Rebbe. Oh, he's so holy. Amazing. And they'll roll out the same thing for us." The 12 of them looked at it and said, "That's a good idea." So they went and they took the most stately one of them. He had a beautiful, he looked so handsome, he looked so holy, and they bought him a white silk, and they bought him a thick silk gartel, and the whole works, black. And they sent six of them into this town. They said, "The Chichiva Rebbe is coming, he's going to be here this afternoon." The town people heard, "Really, who is he? Oh, you don't know how holy he is." They rolled out the red carpet, it was unbelievable. The Chichiva Rebbe comes with all the schnorrers, they're acting. And they had taken a big tish, and there were candles, and there was good stuffed goose and chicken and soup. They feasted, and this Chichiva Rebbe, people would come, and he was giving blessings. He stayed for 2 days. They ate. They drank. It was unbelievable. They went to the next town. They did this for 2 weeks. The third week, for the same thing. They come to this town. The end of the tish. This lady comes over to the Rebbe, and her eyes are all swollen with tears. She says, "Chichiva Rebbe, holy Chichiva Rebbe, yeah? I have a son, my child. He's 3 years old. He has a high fever for 3 days. The doctors have tried everything. They said if the fever doesn't go away in the next hour, he's going to die. Please, Rebbe, come." So he tried to give her a blessing. He said, "No, come, put your hands on my child." The whole town was watching. This Chichiva Rebbe, the collector, you know, stood up. Everybody was looking at him. He said, "Take me to the child." Took him to her house. She comes in. The doctor's already washing his hands. He said, "There's nothing I can do." She takes him into a room. And the child is there. And he sees the child is purple already with fever. And the mother's begging him, "Please, do something. Holy Chichiva Rebbe." He doesn't know what to do. He looks at the lady and he says, "Bring me a Tehillim." She brings him a Tehillim and he closes the door. They waited outside 10 minutes, 20 minutes, half an hour, 40 minutes. An hour later, the door opens up. And the Chichiva Rebbe is standing there, this collector is standing there. And his face is swollen. He was soaked with tears. His whole beard, his kaftan was soaked. And he walked out and he gave the lady the Tehillim and he said, "Your child will be okay." And he left. And they say that this person became a great Rebbe. So you see, mitaych shalay lishma, beautiful story. If you think it, if you do it, if you say it, ultimately you become it. That's the story of this week's parsha. So in our service of Hashem, in our maisa mitzvahs, in our learning, in our davening, in our love for our children, our partners, our spouses, our parents, we say it, we become it. And you know what? If you say it about yourself, you'll become it too. If we say aspirational things about ourselves, "I can, I am, I'm lucky, I'm fortunate," the Chinuch says, "Achrei hapulais nimsha halavaves." We're going to hear the opinions from Rav Hagaon Rav Shmuel Kamenetsky. He's certainly the Zakan Rosh Yeshivas in the Dor today. We'll hear from the Sephardi world, Hagaon Rav David Yosef. He's the son of Rabbi Avad Yosef, and he's going to give over what he heard from his father. From Reb Mendel Shafran, he's the great Chassidish Paisik in Eretz Yisrael. It wasn't easy finding one of the great Chassidish Paisik in the world who speaks English fluently, so we were very lucky. From Rabbi Yitzchak Elchanan, we have a Gaon Reb Herschel Shechta. And we have Reb Nissen Kaplan, a Gaon Reb Nissen Kaplan from the Mir. And the question they're going to deal with, how do we deal with a child who has seriously gone off to Derech. And let's hear the opinion. We'll start with Zakan Rosh Yeshivas, Keset Torah, Hagaon Rav Shmuel Kamenetsky.
You should accept him and love him, but you should tell him that you hope he'll change his mind.
Okay.
Now that's interesting, and we have to assume that what Reb Shmuel is saying, he's probably heard from his father, Reb Yankiv, so we're hearing Doris of keep the child in the house. Now here's a very nuanced opinion from Reb David Yosef, and he says you can keep him at home, but he has to toe the rules while he's in the house. He has to have respect for you too.
Sad question. There are some rabbis that working with Keruv, I think it's an individual question. Sometimes they have to ask a rabbi that know, they have to know the boy and the parents and to see what they can do. So it's an individual question. But in general, a child that Chas v'Shalom, he left the Judaism, and there is no question that he can make his brothers or sisters, Chas v'Shalom, like him, like you, the example you gave me, that they don't have children in the house. The parents has a mission to take him, to love him, and to wish that he will make teshuvah. And, but from the other side, they have to ask him the minimum. The minimum is, you don't want to keep Shabbat, you don't want to eat kosher, but when you are in our house, you have to behave good. You have to not to make Hilul Shabbat. You don't want to go to synagogue, don't go. But don't make Hilul Shabbat. Don't smoke cigarette on Shabbat. Don't turn on the light on Shabbat. Don't do anything that will make us to feel bad, to have pain, to see you doing that. We know you don't do that, but don't do it in our face.
Let's say they do.
In our face, it's chutzpah.
Let's say he does, Kvod HaRav, let's say he does. What do they do then?
They have to tell him, not in our house. If you want to stay here, welcome. You're our son. We love you. But don't do it in our house. This is a very strong thing. They have to be stubborn about that. And I think, it's, as I said, it's individual. Most of the children will accept that. I know families that they had that question. Even they had brothers and sisters for the boy in the house. And they made an agreement with him. You don't talk to them about Judaism. You come, you eat, you say bracha when you eat. You wear kippah when you are in the house. And you go outside, do what you want to do. And I know some families it happened like that. And then later, the children made teshuvah.
Yeah.
I know a story. My father was about 70 years ago. He was in Egypt. And there was a group of young people learning with him Gemara. The best one that my father said he knew all Masechet Kiddushin word after word. After a few years, he went to Eretz Israel from Egypt, from Cairo, and he left the Judaism. And he became an apikoyres, and his father was a rabbi. And my father was between the father and the son was very stubborn, but he doesn't believe. And my father caught the connection with him later. And after many years, I met the man, and I saw he's religious. And he told me, yes, he made teshuvah. He asked me to make an appointment with my father. And he told me that because my father was very tough to him, he made teshuvah. Not because he spoke with him nice. The opposite. So it's individual. Sometimes we have to knock on the table and to say, no way. And sometimes we have to close our eyes. So I think they have to go to a good rabbi that knows the family and the boy and to make something.
Okay.
This is the opinion of Rav Shafran, who really says, you know, Bizman Azeh, they're all Tinik Shanishbiz. That's the Chazanish's opinion. He says, and each case is different. He says they're very often depressed. Listen to a very broad-minded view.
The way to deal with these things is today is with not with Rechuk, not with Kirov. Today in the United States is someone called Fishoff, I think. He has some Igun called Twist. And he gives a chop with is very good. And his shit is that only with loving them and being a car of them and giving them, that's the only way. You really have to go into the nefesh of these children. They're not epicorsim. That's Reb Chaim said that epicorsis is a teret, not a kasha. And the only way to, you have to see that these children are tzibrochen, the children that are mitmared. How you say mitmared?
Depressed.
No, mitmared is called revolting. I think that's the right word.
Okay.
Mitmared, merida. No, mitmared because of some kind of psychological pushings that's pushing them. They had their mashbarim. They went through things. 90% of them went through things that that made them like that. And it's the only way, it's a brochen and a shamus, that's the way they're giving, they're expressing themselves. And you have to be mekar of them to make them, gesund, to make them, how do you say gesund? You make them gesund,
healthy.
Nafshit. Make them healthy, nafshit. And then they change automatically their
But can I ask the Rav, the Mechaba, I think it's in Shin Mem Hei, around that neighborhood, he says that if a child dies, and he was an apikairis, the Mechaba, and I think it's Shin Mem Hei, says that if somebody dies, and he was an apikairis, so he says, loy misablin, the family doesn't sit avelis, like what does it say, misatfim levanim, v'eichlim, v'shoysim, and I think the Pesche Tshuva, one of the places springs, because bavoid rishoyim rina. And this is going to Krovim. So it says, you see, the Krovim are supposed to neman, bavoid rishoyim rina. Is that a contradiction to this concept of loving the child?
No, it's not a contradiction, because first of all, you have to see who's this apikaris. What's his... what's pushing him? What's behind him? What's going to this? I don't want to be mashim the parents, but a lot of times, a bigger percent of the time, it's the parents' fault. And if you want to accuse someone, I think you should accuse not this apikoros, like the person that brought into this apikoros. A lot of times it's the parents' fault. A lot of times it's not their fault. I'm not trying to make the parents feel guilty, but a lot of times, whoever is Isaac in these things knows that the parents are their fault. And the apikoros is not apikoros mitoich apikorosis. He never learned Marin Nevoichim, he never learned philosophia, he's the apikoros that's...
Nebuchadnezzar apikoros, he's just a Nebuchadnezzar.
That's the way he's expressing his veitigen, his kevim, how do you say veitigen,
his pain.
Whatever hurts him. That's the way he's expressing it. It's not this kind of apikoros we're talking about in Chazal, that is moridim v'roi ma'irin. Yeah, let's go with the shayla v'ayter. Is the din moridim v'roi ma'irin? If this person sees his son going to be drowned, shall he kill him? There's no moridim v'roi ma'irin. There's a chazinish about it.
Chazinish says, b'zman hazeh, there's no moridim
v'roi ma'irin. Yeah, there's no ma'irin. It's not this kind of apikoros. It's not this kind of thing that we're talking about, that the Chazal are talking about.
Okay.
Listen to Reb Herschel Shech to say, there is no such a thing as unconditional love, but you must look at the good in each kid. A parent's job is to look for the good.
Patient to try to work with the child, to explain to him historically, we have a, this is not the imagination, we have a historical tradition for our religion. Every point in our religion was demonstrated by several million people. Saw Kriyas Yamsuf, they saw Esamakas, they saw Maimon Har Sinai. Everybody witnessed it. And we have a historical tradition. We know Avicenna Lo Shikrilono. I knew my four grandparents, and they knew their parents and their grandparents. They knew all the way back. They weren't kibbutzes. They weren't jokers who told them stories about Santa Claus coming down the chimney. They told them, they said things that were jokes, and they told them this is a joke. Then they said other things that this is true. Maimon Har Sinai really happened. Samakas and Kriyas Yamsuf really happened. So we have a historical tradition. So the parents have to work with their child. They have a responsibility to work with their child. To have unconditional love for the child, I don't think so. That's in violation of the mitzvah. You have to Hashem Elokecha b'chol levavcha. have to love HaKadosh Baruch Hu b'chol levavcha means, I think the Chavis HaLvavis raises the question, how does one love his spouse? How does one love his children? You have to have b'chol levavcha love HaKadosh Baruch Hu. The answer is, part of loving HaKadosh Baruch Hu is to fulfill his mitzvahs, and some of the mitzvahs mean to marry, to raise children, to love your spouse, to love your children. But this is only by medvar mamurim, if it blends in with the love for HaKadosh Baruch Hu. But if it is in contradiction to the love of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, you're not supposed to have a love for your family members separate from the love of HaKadosh Baruch Hu.
So what does one do? If we have a child who doesn't accept it and is rebellious, etc., do we send him away or do we continue to love him?
I don't think you can continue to love him, but you have to try to keep him in the house, try to educate him, if you keep on pestering the child, he's gonna run away. He won't want to accept what you have to say, but somehow you have to show love towards the child and explain to him that our religion is not based on chalomos, it's based on historical evidence that was witnessed by our ancestors, and not dumb like the miracles that supposedly Yoshke did, that was witnessed by a small group of his disciples. The witnesses that the miracles that we're talking about were witnessed by millions of people.
And if the child rejects it, he absolutely is an apikairis. What do we do then?
You try to convince him at least he shouldn't marry a non-Jewish person, and hope and pray that in the next generation the children will be choizeh b'tshuva.
So do we ever reject the child, or do we always embrace the child? I believe that's the crux of his question.
You embrace the child, but you try to be machzer the child lemutov, but you can't have unconditional, you can't have the same degree of love for a child. You're not supposed to have love for a child who is a kofer b'ika. You have to try to love every Jew, even the Balei Avera. Mesanecha Hashem Esna, we hate those who hate HaKadosh Baruch Hu. We hate the Ra Shebo, but we have to love the Tov Shebo. That's how the Balei Tanya writes. We have to love the Tov Shebo. So in our children, all the Jewish people have Tov Shebo. Everybody has Madrega, Banim, Bnei Yisrael, Arab, Banim, Lamokam. We have in our DNA. So we have to love the Tov Shebo and try to develop that symbol.
You know, I would like to just comment on what Rabbi Herschel Schechter said, see the good in that child. There's a word from his Rebbe, Rabbi Yeshiver Soloveitchik, a guy in Rabbi Yeshiver, he said, Acher heard a baskel that says, Shuvu banim shayavim chutz me acher. So what did he do? He left the fold. And he said, so Rabbi Yeshiver said, he didn't hear well. It didn't say chutz me Elisha baravua, which was his genuine name. It said chutz me acher. And what does acher mean? The other side, the other one. And what the baskel was really telling him is, there's the other side of you that we don't like. Elisha Baravua could certainly do tshuva. We all have in us a spark of an acher. It says that when we bang al chet and yom kippah, we're supposed to clap our chest. We bang our chest. And some of the haredim say, you're supposed to say, ata garamtel, you. There's some evil spark in me that caused. It's not really me. It says, chutz me acher. Acher didn't understand that. So Rabbi Herschel Schechter follows in this and he says, look to see the good. Every child has something good. See it. And here is Rav Nissen Kaplan. And let's see what the Ram in the mirror, Rav Nissen Kaplan, who has so many boys, let's see what he has to say about this.
I think the question is two ways. If they think that they could bring the son back somehow, and to mekarev him somehow back, I think they have to try to do their best. If the kid is a tinuk shenishba, and for medical reasons or kind of anxiety reasons it happened to him, could be even if they cannot be mekarev him back, could be they have to show him the love. But if he's a real apikoyrus, not because he had medical issues, and they don't think that they really are planning to get him back, I think, and if he's really talking the wrong things, I think we know our halacha state that if someone, lemashal shmatzach, we said shiva, yeah? We didn't say that he shmat. I didn't say that he shmat. He just said he became apikiris. I think that is a little bit different yet. But
I think rather
not allowed to have someone that is talking.
Rabbeinu Gershon sat Shiva, but I think the Torah says we don't paskin like that, but Rabbeinu Gershon sat
Shiva for
his son. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah, so
I'm saying, but if a guy is off completely and he's menayetz, and we don't think that we could be makar of him, and he's speaking wrong, I don't think the parents have to have him in the house.
So let me ask you, let me just ask a few questions. For example, we see, and I know it's not a Shulchan Aruch, but there's very little written on this in the Shulchan Aruch. It says Avram Avinu, it says Kach es bincha es yechidcha asher ahavta. So Rashi says, I love both of them. So he says, no. Es bincha yechidcha, he says, shneim ani ayavim. Shneim ani ayavim. It says right before, they said, garish es ama azais, because Yishmol's is dining avodah zarah, and Avram Avinu, Masech avodah zarah shel Avram Avinu was 400 prakim. This was the mitzvah of Avram Avinu. His son is an avodah zarah. He says asher hafta, right? The medr by Esav. You see, Rivka did everything. She made all kinds of games with Yitzchak, not to tell Yitzchak what a rasha Esav is. Even by the end of the parsha, when he says he wants to kill Yaakov, she doesn't go into Yitzchak and say, by the way, he's an Ovid Avodah Zarah. She says, Katzti b'chaye b'mnois cheis, yibachta adzishtigal teira. In the Maise Avos Simon Labanim, you see the Avos with children who are Ovid Avodah Zarah didn't send them away. Sarah did because he was having an effect on Yishmael, but he said Asher Ahavta, and Yitzchak never sent them away. So is there any Maise Avos Simon Labanim to that?
It's hard to know. First, like you mentioned yourself, the Maises did send them away, and Kol Asher Pema Lechosor Shma Bekoilo.
But that was because he was having an effect on Yitzchak. That's right. That's how Farshim learned.
Yeah, you're right. But the Maise he will send away. Chazal tells us that Yishmael did Shuvah. Right? The Gemara says in Bava Basra that Ma'ikru Oiso
Rashi brings
so
it.
So obviously Avram did have an impact on Yishmael.
So is the Maisa of a similar bonim that you can never send them away because with a Hava, sooner or later, you're going to have an impact? Could that be the Maisa of us?
We don't know. We don't know why Avram did not send them away. We don't know how it was. This is number one, I think. And I think number two could be in that generation. We don't know how was the system of the build-up of the Ashkofa was. For example, you know, Avraham Avinu speaks to Bnei Chais. Yaakov deals with Lavan. The other Zagdoshim dealt, and Avraham had friends. I don't know what it means. Einan v'Eshkov, he took Eitzes from them. Again, I don't know what they were, what they kept. So I don't know exactly if what a person that is, for example, if you have a neighbor that is not Jewish and is at the curse, I don't know if you're not allowed to talk to him. I'm not saying you're allowed to. I'm just saying, in our generation, and after Matan Torah, and the way we are, and someone is menayetz, like I started, I said, if you think that you can be makar of him, keep him. If it's not his fault, keep him. But when someone is poyer esapeu menayetz, I don't know if we could be medamet to that kind of generation.
Okay.
So we're going to speak about a very interesting contemporary question. It's become the style in many yeshivas here in America not to have any high school that has no secular studies in high school. Let's hear what the Gedolim have to say about it. What's interesting about it is, Lamashal, the Mechaber in Kuf Nun Vav in Arachayim, the great Beis Yosef, who I guess today wouldn't be let in, his kids maybe wouldn't be let into high school, says that after you finish you're learning and you're davening, you're supposed to go to work. He says, you go to work. The Mechaben Kufnin Vav, I think it's of Kadin Aleph, right? Yelech Lavoidasei. So should we be telling a high school kid a grade school kid graduating eighth grade, I'm sorry, no high school for you. You are going to become such as Talmud Chacham, it's not necessary. What do we say? No, figure it out after 12th grade. Let's start again with, we always start with, Hagoyin Rav Shmuel Kamenetsky.
You should teach him, you should send him to a normal place.
Okay.
Yes, grow up normal.
Okay.
Now here from Eretz Yisrael, We have Reb David Yosef, who has a more right-wing opinion, I'll say.
My opinion, in my experience, I have long experience since I was myself in Yeshivik Tane. I'm telling you, you cannot compare one. If you want to be Talmid Chacham, you cannot compare one that learned in Yeshiva without English subjects to one that learned only Torah. If someone learns 8 hours every day Gemara and 2 hours English, and the other one learned 8 hours Torah and he didn't learn English subjects, the one that learned without English will be bigger Talmid Chacham, much, much bigger. And I saw it when I was learning in Yeshivat Hebron. Some students came from Yeshivat Tichonit. They learned secular subjects also. And they were big matmidim. But the level was much, much lower. Lower level, because their brain was not only dedicated for Torah. And we have to know, if the brain has things, not only Torah, you put a different thing, it means the Torah will be less. So if someone wants to his son to be just Talmid Chacham, he sees Baruch Hashem, he's learning, he wants to be Talmid Chacham, the best thing to send him to a place that learning pure Torah and only Torah. And I want to tell you about that. In our generation, something changed. Something happened. We have now cell phone. We have computers. And I think it's also very bad. We have to find a way that the children will not have that. If they have cell phone, not kosher phone, or computer, not kosher computer, or they play in the computer long time every day, it's also bad. It's like to learn secular subjects. It's not less. So if we want our children to be Talmidei Chachamim, it should be Torah, pure Torah, and to prevent them also from that technological stuff.
Here's Rav Shafran. Again, very nuanced. You know, the Paiskim very often have the they see real life in very nuanced opinion.
Well, let me ask.
It's not, there's not only one way. One of the concerns of the Hanukkah Gedolah is that everything is the same. Whatever is for the biggest Rebbetzin, it's for the smallest Balas Tshuva. It's not everything that's for the big Rebbetzin is for the Balas Tshuva, and not everything that's for the big Rosh Hashiva and the big Tom Trochim is for a Poshti Yid. It depends on the kind of family, the kind of people, what does it look like? It's also this, the Ashkofas of the people. There's no halacha on Dafke like this. There's no dafka
okay.
This way. Not this
saying
way.
It's very
whatever,
sensitive.
Whatever I'm going to say, you could say the other way around. And it's right. There's 2 ways. There's 5 ways. There's 20 ways.
Mm-hmm.
There isn't halacha on this. It's really dependent on what kind of background the family is. It's right that if he's the background of an American kind of a family that he's also to take a job, then he's not going to get a job without education, high school education. And you're supposed to prepare your child to live hope to his life.
And here is the opinion of Rabbi Herschel Schechter from Rabbi Yitzchak Elchanan. I imagine we could understand where he'll be going, but let's hear how he says it. I think his point is very often that eighth grade kid who the Rebbe says is going to be a gadol, well, maybe the eighth grade Rebbe isn't such an expert on who's going to be a gadol, right? How do we know who's going to be a gadol when they're 12 years old, for the most part?
Okay.
I remember I attended a bar mitzvah of a Talmud of mine who was making a bar mitzvah for one of his younger children. So he tells me that an older son who was already graduating high school, so the Rebbe thought that he's so gewaldic like this description that he really shouldn't go to college. He doesn't need any college. He's a Mitzvah Gadol. What do I think? So I said, I don't know your older son. Maybe if I'll talk to him at learning. So by the bar mitzvah wasn't shaykh. So he sent the boy. He was an older boy, about 17 or so. He was finishing high school, starting college. So he sent him to speak to me one day in learning. So I whatever perek he was learning, so I asked him questions, and perek didn't know anything. I don't know how the Rebbe thought he was and didn't know anything. So I never called the father back, and the father never called me. The son must have told the father that I gave him a faher, and he didn't know anything. What do you mean the Rebbe said he's gewaldic? He couldn't answer one question straight. Maybe the Rebbe was giving a lot of pilpul in the shir, and I was asking just facts. I don't know what pilpul the Rebbe said. I'm just asking, what does the Gemara say? What does the Mishnah say? What does Rashi say? What does they say? That he couldn't answer. Maybe he knew a lot of pilpul. He couldn't. So the father didn't ask me, and I didn't tell him. He realized that the kid is going to need college. Then he came to YU. He learned in my shiur. He learned in our shiur. Now he's a Rebbe in yeshiva. Now he knows how to learn. Now he's a Rebbe in yeshiva. But I don't think that's right. How can the Rebbe tell when the student is holding by elementary? He's finishing elementary school. They should send him to a high school without any secular studies. What's going to be later if he doesn't steig in learning? You have to have a backup to be able to make a parnasa. The father is mechuyev lalamda umnes. He has to teach his son a parnasa. He has to be able to make a parnasa. I don't think that's right. To send a child in his day and age, to send a child to a school where there's no secular education for high school, I don't think that's a smart thing. I don't think it's proper. How can the Rebbe already know if the child is only finishing high school? Elementary school, he's only finishing elementary school. He already knows. But Malola is not Karenar. He can tell already now that he's going to be such a big Talmud Chacham, he's not going to need any secular education to make a living. I don't think that's right. It's not fair to the.
Tough question.
Harav Nissen Kaplan.
This is a real tough question, and I will explain why. Some people, it's good for them to learn English. You know, you're right. If I knew, if you could sign to me that this is the next Moshe Feinstein, I would say forget about it. Yeah? But I don't know if he will be the next Moshe Feinstein. I don't know where he will be. I don't know why his Rebbe feels like that. It could be his Rebbe really wants him to go to that yeshiva. It's not because the Rebbe is so important for him that he will not learn English, but he thinks that if he will be in a frumer environment, and a frumer yeshiva, this boy will have an effect to grow very strongly. On the other hand, if he will be in a different yeshiva, even if it's a good yeshiva, it could be this kind of boy will get distracted with different kind of studies, and in the end he will not come to where he has to come. So if I would be the Rav of that family, I would really discuss with the Rebbe to hear what is the reasons that made him to take this decision. I think the parents that are asking the question is not exactly fair, because the question is not education and only Torah, going back to the question, Torah, Voido, Remei, Melamedan is B'Yumnus, and not Melamedan is B'Yumnus. You know, we have so much people that learn in yeshiva without no education, and they're multimillionaires today, yeah? And we have people that went to school and they didn't make a penny. We have everything today.
But my question, Kvod HaRav, it's true, so then Remei said, Chayivad why teach him an umnes? There are so many people who are
millionaires. Okay, so I'm getting back. But that was not the mother's question. This is what I'm trying to explain. I don't think in the discussion of this young fellow that we're discussing, we have to bring the world question to Melamed Bnei Umnes or not. Again, a lot of times, I'm just first answering, you know, we're trying to answer these people from all over the world. That parent that asking this question has to understand that could be they have a nice boy. He's in the eighth grade. Yeah, and now he's going to have to go to high school. And it's two kind of seventh grade. I don't know every country and every state how it goes to. And a lot of time, these boys, you send them to yeshiva, they grow. Then they come to learn by me. And when they're 21, I tell them do college by night and catch up. And sometimes I tell them, no, you go to be a Rosh Yeshiva. We're not blocking the boy. Just a lot of times, the boy is in a kind of crossway that the Rebbe thinks that now it's good for him. This is what I really think. I don't think that the Rebbe is saying, no, don't teach people abilities to have a parnasa. So I would really suggest, I don't mind if she would call me personally, and I would try to call the Rebbe and help her, but I think we have to know what is standing behind the Rebbe's decision, if to know if she's right or wrong, or to discuss it with the Rebbe. and to hear both sides of the picture.
So what is the Rav's opinion about, in general, sending kids to high school or sending them to a school that doesn't have secular education, being that, even though there are exceptions, for the most part, children who do not get a high school education struggle much more to make it in the workforce should they decide to go to work?
I'll tell you, the question is a very, very hard question. And I will explain. Sometimes you see people that go to high schools with education and they become choshuvei guys, choshuvei tamim chachamim. And you have people that don't go to these, and they go to full limud kodesh, and they go off in the end. And it's hard to answer on a specific person. The reason the Gdolei HaDor are pushing that we'll have a lot of Moses with less education is, this is what I think, you know, I'm not in that position that, you know, that made the system and they're running the system, but, you know, Baruch Hashem today, everyone learns Zafayemi. I would say most people. Most people open a Gemara, right?
Yeah.
A large amount of people, 50 years ago, it was not like that. Everyone has chashivas to Torah. Why? Because there's a lot of Torah. So even the people that are not learning the whole day, but no one will give up on a little bit of learning Torah. Everyone wants to be a part of the system of Torah. If everyone will study, and everyone, we don't know how the picture will look in the end. You're right. When you're speaking of a specific person, sometimes you think, oh, he will not have education. If we would not have Lakewood full with people, I don't know if in the edge, just 1 second, I'm sorry, the edge, we will have so much Torah, if you understand what I'm saying.
Yeah, but
I'm not saying only when
the first 50 years of Lakewood, everybody in Lakewood had gone to secular education. This new mud in America to cut out high school is a little bit of chadash.
I'm saying again, it could be detail right, you're right. I'm trying to explain the big picture in Mashkofa. We don't have a study in taking everyone and start to make today open-wise. You know, the world today goes to corners, to left, to right. No one is anymore in between. This is our generation. Money is very strong today. Everyone is making money. All the young guys are making money. Everyone is pushing for money. If everyone will have this ability, and it will be a normal thing, could be no one will want to stay and learn in the end. We don't know how it will look.
But everybody went.
I know my father lived in Baltimore. I'm just saying, what, you know, a lot of times people say, look how many kids go off the derech from the system. Yeah? And I say, listen, I don't know. But for example, we'll say 10% go off from the derech because of the system. I'm just giving an example. I'm sure it's only 1%. But just to make it easy, I'm saying 10%. I'm sure it's even 0.5%, 0.25%. What if we would not have the system so strong? How many kids in there? You're right. A lot of boys that is hard for them will fit in the system. I agree. But who knows how much more boys in the end will not care not to be in this learning. And I mean less. I don't have a study of it. And I think when people are judging the system, it's a question mark. I don't know the answer. But I think that the system is strong. A lot of people fall out of the system. But a lot of people, they start to learn. I see some of my kids, you know, they're in school and they go to a good yeshiva and they get the drive and they're zooming up. Yeah? I don't know if there will be no system. I know for myself, I'm sure, you know, for different people. You know, but as Zmanim, a lot of times people learn less from doing this man, right? Why? Because there's no atmosphere around you, so even the good person learns a little bit less. I'm not saying that because of that to do the system. I'm just saying it's hard to answer if the system is right or the system is wrong.
So you're saying that, so let's go back to the question, the din of chayiv adam lamed b'nai umnes, is it relevant b'zman hazeh or not?
As Rabbi Chanan discussed it, if I remember right, in Kevitz Ma'amorim, that it's not so poshut if it's really relevant. In the old days, a person did not have a way to live and to survive if he didn't have her umnes. In our days, there's ways person doesn't have to learn. I know a lot of Talmidim of mine. I could tell you names. They learned in yeshiva for 5 years, and after that, when they were ready, they took a little course, and they're running nursing homes all over America.
There's truly exceptions to every case. There are people that will be successful but Ramey said, "Call me Shain Malamed Benay Umnis Malamde Listis." You certainly have that same reason today.
Right, but I'm explaining it today. It's much easier to catch up later. This is what I'm trying to explain.
So Rav Kaplan seems to say that Malamde Umnis may have changed, the times may have changed, and I went online and I checked. Could look at it. There's a number of different sites that report lifetime earnings for different education levels. The difference between going to high school and not is a 30% difference in lifetime earnings. Astonishing, 30%. So when Chazal said Lamdei Umnis, they really knew what they were talking about. And I would make a Kal Vachoymer. In those days, let's face it, there was no technology, there was no licensing. Think how much a doctor, a lawyer, if there was no such thing as a lawyer. There was no iPhones and computers. So they said in those days when working was rather simple, you needed a Lamdei Umnis. Today, with all the laws of degrees and the amount of technology, isn't it a Kal Vachoymer that you have to get educated? So both factually and misvara, I find the concept that, you know, the halacha has changed to be, you know, worrisome. Like to host an interview with Dr. David Pelkowitz, and he's going to respond to, last week we had, you know, the Rabbanim speaking about the letter, a tragic letter of an older single woman who asked if she can become impregnated by a donor, being that she doesn't want to die alone and she doesn't have anybody who would marry her. And a number of the Rabbanim said, this child you're bringing into the world is a yasam. The Torah 36 times warns about the pain of a yasam. Why would you want to create a tragic situation? So I wanted to ask, this is a social issue, not a halacha issue. So I brought on Dr. Pelkowitz, who's arguably the greatest, you know, psychologist in the Orthodox world, to say, what has been his experience with these types of children? So let's go to the interview with Dr. Pelkowitz, and then we'll begin our regular program. We have on the phone with us Dr. David Pelkowitz, who's probably the most renowned psychologist in the Orthodox world and expert on too many topics to even, you know, start a titling him. Welcome, Dr. Pelkowitz.
Pleasure to be here.
Last week we had on a number of Rabbanim, including, let's say, Rav Herschel Shechta, we had Rav Menachem Mendel Shafran, who very clearly stated that it would be mutter, would be permissible for a single woman to become pregnant via a donor. But there would be severe, they felt it would be usher because it would be doing, you'd be doing wrong by the child. And Reb David Cohn said, you're creating an orphan. And as a psychologist who deals with just about every type of problem in our community, what has been your experience? Have you encountered mothers and children like that? And, you know, are you indeed creating a tragic figure? You know, the Torah says 36 times, you know, have mercy on the orphan, the almana. Are we indeed creating a tragic figure here?
Right. So let me share with you purely from the standpoint of some of the psychological research on this, because there have been studies, although the studies are still in their infancy, but they do shed some light on that question. So there's been a series of studies done in London where they compare groups of single mothers by choice, who most of whom got married later in life because they couldn't find the right person. They would have loved to have got married, but they just couldn't find anybody. So these are women who in their late 30s, early 40s, decided to conceive by donor insemination. But then what the researchers do that's really interesting is they compare a group of these women and their children to a group of women who were married and also conceived by donor insemination because of medical reasons. And they look at it in all kinds of interesting ways. They look at what's the quality of the mother-child relationship, how does the kid do? And in every study done here and in Eretz Yisrael that I've seen, and again, these aren't large-scale studies, but they're, you know, like 50, 60 people in each of the comparison groups. any differences that they find, for the most part, show that these kids and the mothers seem to be doing at least as well, if not better. So, for example, when they compare in London, mothers who are single mothers by choice and their children to a comparison group of also kids conceived by donor insemination from regular marriages and intact families, they find no differences in parenting quality, no difference in the kids' adjustment. And what they find is that the reason for, because it's kind of, you have to ask, why would that be? But it's because everything we know about the problems with single mothers otherwise is, they think it's largely because of children of divorce or at risk for obvious reasons, because they're exposed to conflict, there are often financial problems afterwards. Here you don't have it. This is a kid who's very much loved, who's brought into the world often by a more mature mother. Most of them are financially able to care for their child. Most of them are settled. And the child's incredibly loved. Now, of course, you know, it goes without saying, I certainly understand what the various poskim are saying. It makes a lot of sense that, of course, you know, how could you bring a child into the world who's not going to have a father actively involved? But it seems that when you look at it more empirically, I guess these women often bring in their fathers to be involved, they bring in their brothers to be involved, they bring in the community to be involved. And when you look at it empirically, it seems that there's no obvious kind of difference, and any findings they find are for the most part positive. But here's the problem. The problem is this hasn't been going on long enough for us to have really permanent answers. Right now, the studies are kids who are, let's say, 6 years old. We don't know what it's going to look like when these kids are 15 years old and are much more aware of how they're different from other kids who have fathers actively involved. But in terms of main measures, there's a wonderful relationship between the kid and her, and his or her mother. There tends to be great functioning all around in every way they could measure it.
Dr. Palkowitz, what do we do with Rav David Cohn's question? He said, the Torah warns us repeatedly, have mercy on the yasim, the orphan. Why would a child who's born without a father, because the father passed away, have a different happiness measure or life success measure than a kid who never had a father? What's the logic to it?
Right. So the logic is, and again, I can't, without, obviously I have, undying, incredible respect for the brilliance of Rav David.
And by the way, Herschel Schechter said they were not on the phone at the same time. They said it almost verbatim. You're creating
right.
A yasim. They both said that.
And I understand that, and it makes sense to me. The only thing
you're saying the evidence is not that way. So what's the logic? We have why would this be? And we know the Torah's logic is immutable. So why would it be different in this case?
For a bunch of reasons. One is because the mothers are different than other situations. So let's say you think of a child who, let's say, grew up with a father and then lost a father. That's the yasam. Here, it's a child who never knew anything else. There's no loss of that kind. So they're born to a mother who wanted them more than anything in the world. They're born to a mother who, in the studies, they're psychologically just as healthy as any other woman. The reason they're single has nothing to do with their psychological
health. Can I encapsulate? You're saying that the yasim in the Torah is a post-traumatic stress disorder, something
right.
That's occurred. A child who's been born into really a very stressful, the loss of a parent, the mother who very possibly wasn't financially, physically, etc., socially able to handle. So this post-accident, whereas this is not post-traumatic stress syndrome, this is actually something that's very planned and is done with love, and the child is totally prepared. Was that what you're saying?
Exactly. So it's a whole different psychological process. Now, The reality is we don't know. It could be that as these kids get older, you know, and many of them will even know how they came into this world, because the tendency of women in these situations is to share the birth story of how they came to being with their kid. And we don't know how that's going to look as the kids get old enough to become more self-aware and more aware of how they're alike and different from other kids. So we don't know. But at least in the short term, in the first 5-6 years of their life, I'm not aware of any studies that show anything other than pretty significant evidence of good functioning in every area they look at. You know,
well, thank you. Well, thank you very much, Dr. Pelkowitz, and we wanted to hear your professional life's experience opinion on this matter, and we thank you very much.
Thank you. Thanks. Okay.